This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Take care of your property with equipment you can count on, like the Kubota BX and LO1 series compact tractors, part of our under 100 horsepower tractor lineup, rated number one for reliability, and Z-Series mowers and Sidekick utility vehicles, where durability meets speed. Visit your local Kubota dealer for a demo today. Go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Visit GoKubota.com for a dealer near you.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $700 on average, and those savings add up. Imagine what you could buy in the future.
Hey, remember how 20 years ago I switched to Progressive? Well, now it's the future, and I used all those savings to buy this new hologram phone. Because, you know, it's the future, and everything is holograms now.
So switch to Progressive and save big, because those savings can add up in the future. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National annual average insurance savings by new customer surveyed who saved with Progressive in 2020. Potential savings will vary.
And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman. Joining me right now is Emilio Danella and Max Cohen. This is our post-match show of Fulham's 2-0 victory against Hull City. I can't stand Hull City. I'll just share that one more time. At Craven Cottage, Emilio was there. Max and I watched it via our streams. We all have opinions on it. So let's not waste any time. Let's just get right to it. Emilio, I'm going to go to you first. I'm just going to ask you the simple question. Angry Emilio or happy Emilio? I have a feeling it's going to be the latter. Your opening thoughts on this 2-0 victory through your eyes. You were there.
Hi, guys. I'm Max. Always good to do the show with you. Obviously very happy. Can't complain. It's, you know, four games in. Marco Silva's come in with, you know, obviously setting his stall out. You know, we're scoring goals. We're playing good football. You know, some of our sort of fringe players, you could argue, players that we loaned out the last couple of seasons, now starting to get some game time. So it's a lot to look forward to be honest. I think it's, like I said, me being the optimist plus cautious side of me as well. It's four games in. Let's not get too carried away. All we can do is beat the opposition in front of you. Hull were poor. The first half hour was a very open game. You know, they were attacking us. They took the game to Fulham at times, and you know, it was just quality that made the difference at the end of the day. But overall, you know, we've got a lot to be happy about. I think we've obviously got a few injuries, you know, which are slightly bothering me at the moment, but we'll talk about that during the show. But overall, no reason to be angry. I think there's a lot of optimism. You know, it's good to see fans happier. We haven't got all the negativity that we got in the Middlesbrough game a fortnight ago. So people have long forgotten Middlesbrough. Now it's three consecutive wins. And there is a lot to look forward to, but you know, clearly it's a long season ahead. So all we could do is keep chipping away, keep getting the performances in, playing the players that we've got who are contracted to play at the club, and you know, we will score goals. And that's been a pleasure this season. The fact that we're just scoring goals. I don't care if we concede. I said it a couple of weeks ago. As long as we score more than we concede, I'm okay with it. I just want to see some entertaining football, and we're seeing that at the moment. And the players all look up for it. That's what's quite clear. You know, we'll look up for it. Kudi Mitrovic, if he's up for it, then
absolutely.
You know there's something right in the dressing room there.
Okay, right back to you. Before I get the thoughts of Max, his opening thoughts, would you call this a professional performance, meaning that it wasn't flashy, Emilio. And I'm glad that you mentioned this because you know how I feel about Hull City, but I have to give them credit. They played with no fear. Yeah. They actually, again, they were attacking at times, and they looked like they came to win the match, not just get a draw. I've seen reports that they were trying to play for a point. I didn't see that. I thought they were actually going for it, so I want to give them credit. But I thought Fulham handled it about as good as you could handle it, and it just was a professional job. It wasn't as flashy against Huddersfield Town and Millwall, but they got the job done. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, it's true. And I think if you look at what they were trying to do, they were obviously trying to play on the break, you know, have their last man right on the halfway line. So they had a game plan. But at the end of the day, I don't think we did, you know, it wasn't our best performance of the season, weirdly. And I think the fact is we didn't have to play at our best to beat Hull City. And that's encouraging as well. And we keep saying, don't play particularly well and win comfortably. That's an encouraging sign, to be honest. But I didn't think, you know, with moments, you know, we especially in the first half on the left, you know, Robinson had a lot of space, getting a lot of good crosses, looked very lively. But overall, you know, second half, I think we deliberately took our foot off the gas because we had injuries, didn't need to stretch ourselves. We dominated the second half without really looking too dangerous. We didn't have to get out of second gear. So why exert yourself? Why risk more injuries? So I think there was a game plan at half time there saying, look, take the foot off the gas, keep possession and try to make something happen, but don't go killing yourselves for the sake of getting a third or a fourth goal, which is why it was only a 2-goal margin in the middle. It could have been a lot more if we didn't have any injuries.
That's a very good point there. Mel, okay, over to you, Max. Before I do, I'm just going to share a couple of comments. Please keep your comments coming. We have someone listening, watching from Spain, so thank you for sharing. And this is actually, to go off on what Tony said, Hull never gave up. Otherwise, we would have scored more goals. That's to Emilio's point. And I just want to share this as well before I go over to Max. Mitro can hit 40 goals. I've heard talk about that. I'd be happy if he hits 30 goals. But okay, fine. You know, we'll see what happens with Mitro. But he is looking like he is up for this, which is excellent. Okay, Max. I always say, is it Mad Max or Optimus Max? Again, I'm going to say the latter there, but you tell me, are you still Optimus Max? Because last season you were Mad Max, which understandable. I can't imagine you're Mad Max today.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Ross. The tweet I did after the match, I think, really sums up this dynamic.
Okay.
Of how just 2 months ago, Ross, you and I did a show when it looked like Parker would leave, but wasn't confirmed yet.
Right.
We had no signings, and the club was adrift. And we very firmly said to the club leadership, things need to change. Because it looked like after a draining season, it would be another disappointing year. And how quickly that mood has changed at Fulham just 2 months later. Marco Silva's here. I think we had the best squad in the championship. Mm. And the important thing is we're playing like it.
Right.
It's not really that different than what we had under Parker in 1920. Except then we played with a handbrake on. We won every single match essentially by one goal. Mm. We didn't seem like we were playing like we believed we could, you know, sweep away teams. But so far, 4 matches into this season, we look like we know we're good. And that's an important thing for a team to have that confidence, but also having the manager who lets them play that way, relentlessly attacking. For the past 2 matches, you could even argue 3 matches, we've been asking for that third goal cushion.
That's right.
How rare is that? I mean, I can't remember times as a Fulham supporter when it's like, we're 2-0 up and we're thinking, all right, let's get that third. I mean, it's a great position to be in. And it's just brilliant to have that feeling around the club. I think that's due to a lot to Silva. He likes us to be on the front foot. He likes us to assert ourselves. And we didn't even get the third goal against Hull. We didn't need to play exceptionally well, but we got the 3 points.
That's right, Max. And back to you, because I'm glad that you talked about the difference being the handbrake. I would also say there is a tactical difference. And one of the things that I keep noticing, and I think you're going to agree with me, and unfortunately Tim Ream got hurt, but Alfie Mawson was able to do this as well. He was able to pick out those passes. Tosin was. They didn't do that under Parker. They also didn't get to the byline the way that they are under Parker. There is a tactical difference here, and the handbrake is off. They are going for that third goal. That's a good point by you. So what are your thoughts about that? Because I know we, you know, again, listen, I don't want to keep killing Scott Parker, but I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't get a little happy when they drew 2-2 to Blackpool. I did, but I want to get your thoughts because I think it's more than just taking the handbrake off, Max. I think there is a tactical difference.
I agree. I think, you know, looking back to the whole Parker discussion, what we saw looking back was an inexperienced manager. And in my opinion, it was a manager who didn't quite believe in himself to play the free-flowing football that Fulham's capable of playing. And that's understandable. You know, it was his first full-time job and he wanted to keep it tight, as you guys mentioned, as he played like a player, get it done, but nothing too fancy. Put in a shift. And that's what really exemplified Fulham under Parker, was putting in a shift.
Right.
Marco Silva is a very experienced manager. Three Premier League clubs, you know, won the league in Greece. Great success in Portugal. He knows how to handle a team that has much better quality than Fulham. And it's showing. He knows how to attack. He knows how to let a team express themselves. It's also very simple. It's just a quicker style of play. We're getting the ball from defensive attack much quicker. Not long ball. Just incisive passes. And he has the right players for it. As you mentioned, the wingbacks. I think Robinson's really thriving. Tete's looked decent.
Yep.
But also someone like Carvalho, someone like Harry Wilson, Cavalera. These are players who I think are thriving under Silva. And it has to do with that attacking.
Yes.
Forward-looking play.
It's a mindset. Get the
wingbacks involved.
It's a mindset.
Mindset. Get Micho even dropping deep. Get Carvalho linking up, dribbling. Everyone just seems to be playing with a level of freedom that not only wasn't there in the Premier League last season, wasn't there two seasons ago in the Championship.
Okay, very good. All right, back over to you, Emilio. I'm going to share some quotes from Marco Silva. Oh, looks like Emilio had the drop off. Hopefully he'll be back with us a second. Well, I will share it with you then, Max, and hopefully we'll see Emilio in just a second. The reason why I wanted to bring Emilio in is because some of his comments that he made to open the show, actually, let's see if we can get Emilio back on. All right, Emilio, you're back on.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Just went dead.
Okay, not a problem. I want to share these two quotes from Marco Silva. I broke it up into two parts here. This is on the Fulham website because I think they epitomize what you just said. And what's interesting about these quotes is that they match you, meaning that they match what the manager is saying is what a fan would say. So I'm gonna read them. This afternoon was not perfect for us, but again, we won the game because we were the best team on the pitch. Here's the other part of the quote. We were dominant, we scored twice, and we had three or four clear chances to score more goals, unquote. Now, that's kind of what you were saying there, Emilio, which, again, I find that different than what we would hear from Parker in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, he's kind of on the same wavelength as we see it. He's seeing it similar to us. So I want to get your thoughts on how Marco Silva saw the match.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we were dominant, especially that second half. You know, Hull had to come at us. You know, they had nothing to lose. 2-0 down away from home against, like Max says, probably the best squad in the division. They didn't offer anything. And to be honest, we had injuries in the back of our mind. Two key players gone out, you know, for injury. So, you know, we didn't have to get out of second gear, like I mentioned earlier. And I think, I'm not sure we have three or four clear chances to score more goals. I think that maybe that's a bit too bullish to buy. But I think we dominated possession. We looked lively. But, you know, their keeper wasn't tested as much as he could have been.
No.
I think that's but overall, you know, I'm not disappointed about that. The key thing is the clean sheet was important for me, saying that, you know, there's all this criticism. Maybe we know how to score goals, but under Marco Silva, he's got a tendency from conceding at set pieces. So clearly it's good to get that clean sheet under our belt. Good for the goalkeeper as well, because he's not come under criticism, but there's a few nerves around the fans, including myself, around his, you know, is he a strategic option? Is he a better option than Rodak for us? So, he did flap his lines a bit in the second half. He had nothing to do all game, and suddenly when he was called upon, he flapped it, to be honest. So that just, you know, the goalkeepers need to stay focused and concentrated, and clearly he lost with focus and nearly flapped his lines. But overall, we were dominated. We didn't have to get out of second gear. And sometimes it's nice to win 5-6-0. But let's be realistic. This is a squad that struggled to score more than, you know, only 9 goals in the home all season last year. So this is the difference in boundaries here. I know we've got different opposition, clearly, but the fact that we can score goals, we look comfortable, we look dominating, and you know, we're dominating games. That's important. You know, but then again, you know, it's good to get that momentum at the beginning of the season. I think this is our best start since a Tigana year. So
yeah, it's fantastic.
We know what happened that season as well. So fingers crossed we could do something similar this year. But it's take each game as it comes, protect your squad. I think we may need to look at reinforcements. Obviously, we've got a few injuries. Transfer window closes very soon. So, but overall, you know, the Khans have made a so far, so, you know, very good, wise selection for their manager.
I think so as well, Emilio. And over to you, Max. You know, again, the reason why I want to bring up these quotes, because when I read them and then I heard obviously what Emilio said, it kind of rang true for me. It almost sounds like what Emilio said, these quotes. So I'm thinking, okay, what are your thoughts about what Marco Silva has brought? Also, how he has presented himself to the Fulham supporters in his pressers after the match. Your thoughts on Silva and his thoughts that it was a dominant performance. I believe you also said that as well.
Yeah, I think so far he's done everything right, in my opinion. Now, granted, it's only four matches in, and we know we still have 42 league matches to go. That's the big caveat for me, is that we've seen...
Let's see the adversity.
Yeah, we've seen championship seasons change so quickly. I mean, yep. Let's not forget, in Slavisa, what, we were probably 12th at Christmas time when we went up in 2018. So not to say that we're going to tank the second half of the season under Silva, but it's still a small sample size. But
it is.
To date, he's been superb. I think the team selection, apart from the goalkeeper, which people have issues with, it's been flawless. I don't really have an issue with it.
Okay.
He's been given a great squad to work with. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. I mean, we haven't even mentioned, you know, Sarri and Gisa. These are players who are well above the quality of the championship. You could maybe add Micho into that. But he's gotten someone like Cavalero, who looked hopeless for large stretches of last season, you know, scored twice at Huddersfield, looks an exciting player. Niskan Scovano, for the first time, I can remember in recent memory, he's been given the starting role to begin a season, and he's excelling. I mean, he's looking like the best I've ever seen him play, which is something. So I think Silva's, the best thing you can say about him is he's made every single player look a better player than they were perhaps a season, two seasons ago. It's that confidence. You know, we have Boa Morte back at the club. That has to be a factor.
Too.
It's a feel-good factor. And you have the stability of Stuart Gray, who's been there through, you know, thick and thin over the past, you know, 5 years. So I think all of those combining is creating a very feel-good factor among the club. Mm-hmm. But Silva hasn't done anything wrong, in my opinion, so far.
No, and I'm glad that you brought this up, because it's a great segue, Max. You did a fantastic job, because now we're going to talk about Sarri, the emergence of Sarri, because you talked about the other players. Because it seems like Silva's getting the most out of, like you said, Cavalero. We're now talking about Sarri and some of these other players that maybe we have not seen. And the question is it Silva? Is it the players? Is it a combination of his staff? Everything combined, it's all firing on cylinders. Is it the system that he's playing? So let's now talk about, and I'll go to you, Emilio, because you had a nice back and forth on Twitter when it came to Sarri today. So let's talk about that, and then I'll get Max's thoughts on Sarri. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that Max brought this up, because we now have several players that are really shining under Marco Silva, and Sarri's one of them, and everyone pretty much counted him out. But you, my friend, you thought that we might see him. You ended up being right. So let's talk about what you're seeing and the emergence of Sarri to be a key player so far, which is crazy to say.
It is. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was a Huddersfield game a couple of weeks ago. Before that game, I said, play him. You know, we had the injuries in central midfield. I said, you've got these Anguissa and Sarri, you know, worth what, 55, 60 million between them? Play them. They're contracted to play at the club. Get your arms around them, Marco Silva. Give them a pat on the back, a bit of vote of encouragement, and get them to play for the team. Because this player isn't a bad player overnight. And I think I'm trying to assess why are we seeing an emerging Sarri here? And I think a lot of it might be to do with Tom Kearney's not in the squad. We've always talked about Tom Kearney. What's his position? What's Sarri's position? Remember, we were talking about this 3 years ago when we got promoted to the Premier League. We haven't got that dilemma at the moment. And I think, no disrespect, maybe we have seen the end of Tom Kearney's days. We don't need him at the moment. You know, we talk about some of these other players, but clearly we're not missing Tom Kearney at the moment.
And look at all the players that have not been available yet.
Yeah, no, you know, and some of the people are saying it's an easier division, but I don't care if it's an easier division or not. Sarri is there. He's contracted to play for the club. He's obviously feeling confident. He's obviously getting a boost from the manager. The team is winning. All of these factors are you know, he's able to, you know, put his authority on the game. You can see just simple anticipating the play, breaking up the play. He's not necessarily the quickest player in the world, but he's very intelligent. And I think that's the key. That we haven't seen enough of that in his career at Fulham. And now he's obviously got a bit more freedom. And that's the key thing. He's got that freedom of the central midfield. His set pieces a lot more encouraging than what we've seen from other players. And obviously, he got the assist on Saturday as well. For me, he was man of the match, but we'll talk about that later. Yep. But overall, it just having somebody there who can protect your back four with a lot of Premier League class, albeit he hasn't shown it for Fulham. I mean, these players don't become bad overnight. Clearly, he's in the right setup, right formation. The team is winning. They're scoring goals, and think that the Tom Kearney dilemma is not there at the moment. How many times have you talked about Loftus-Cheek or Kearney? Sarri or Kearney? There's never a Kearney situation where he has total authority of that in that central midfield. It was always a dilemma with Tom.
And we're still missing Harrison Reed, Emilio. Think about that as well.
Yeah, and we are. And to be honest, in a weird way, we're missing his sort of assertiveness at times because he's obviously physically stronger, you know, running around like a headless chicken at times. But what we see with Seri is more calm, composed. The way he just moves the ball around simply and effectively. And that's what's key. Sometimes it's not all about running around like a headless chicken. It's about quality when it counts. And that's what
you're controlling the play.
It's just, it's beautiful to watch. But yep. Can he continue this? Blackpool away, Preston North End away in the winter time? Let's see. But it's three games he's played and he's got two man of the matches from me of that. And that's saying a lot. But I think that we should focus on the Tom Kenny dilemma there. We haven't got that problem at the moment. I think
that's a good point.
We haven't got that to worry about and we're not missing him.
That's a good point. Over to you, Max. I want to get your thoughts on what Emilio just shared about Seri and also the fact that Tom Kearney's been out and the train keeps going along without him. And, you know, and Seri's been doing a fantastic job. And I'll share this one more time. And yes, I agree, Alan, it is an easier division. But he was a quality player before he came to Fulham. I believe it was the Man City match where everything just went downhill from that point on. But he does have quality. And I want to give Silva himself and the staff credit for getting that quality out, regardless of the division, Max. So I want to get your thoughts on what Emilio shared. Also, the fact that we don't have Kearney and he's thriving. The one criticism that I would have, and I think you're going to agree with me, is that sometimes he gets caught by hanging on the ball too much and players are just coming after him and taking the ball off him. He's a little nonchalant would be the best way I could say it. It's happened a few times. It actually happened in the Premier League, but it's now happening in the Championship. He just needs to be a little bit sharper and not so nonchalant. Would you agree with me on that?
I agree. You know, I have a very long history with Seri. I was one of his biggest critics back in the Premier League season. But I don't think it's surprising that someone who I think we know has the quality to play at the top level of European football is doing well in the Championship. You know, that's just on the face of it makes sense. Like he's far too good for this league in terms of his technical ability.
Sure.
The issue with Seri, as you mentioned very astutely, Ross, is that he didn't fit well in the Premier League because he had no time on the ball.
That's right.
He'd be pressed, he'd be harried, he'd be put outside of his comfort zone. He couldn't get into his little metronome passing. The Championship, although, you know, we see it as a tougher division in many ways, it is, you do have more time on the ball. Teams aren't pressing you 90 minutes like they are in the Prem. So I think for that, that's worked really great in Seri's favor. I do want to give him massive credit for playing in the Championship. I never once in my life expected Seri to ever lace up his boots in the second division.
I agree. Never. I didn't expect it either.
He didn't stick around, you know, back in 1920, and Parker didn't think he was good enough or, you know, didn't think he was necessary last season in the Premier League. So I really thought his Fulham future was done. So I think credit to Silva for convincing him to stay. Also credit to Seri because I think he sees himself as above this league because he is, but he's still done a shift. I'm not going to go out and wax lyrical about it. I know Emilio said he's man of the match. I'm not sure if I agree. He's doing a good job. He's not doing something too insane. He's just kind of passing the ball about, but we need someone like that, I think, in this team. And for that, I can't believe he's playing for us against teams like Huddersfield,
yeah, you
know, Borough, Millwall. But he's done it, and credit to him.
Okay, and I want to get your thoughts on what Emilio said about, you know, and again, we really haven't talked about it that much. Tom Kearney not being available. And yeah. Fulham are still functioning very well without him. And I love Tom Kearney, and I would like to see Tom Kearney play a part. I'm starting to get a little bit concerned if fitness will allow him to, if the injuries have really caught up to him. But, and I'm going to say this, and I don't want to say this, I think Fulham can deal much better now without him than in years past.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that, Max?
It's true. I love Kearney, you know, club legend, servant to the club. One of our, if not the longest serving player, definitely up there with Reem, I think. I think he's done at this level. You know, Paul in the comments on Facebook said his time's up at Fulham. I think his time's up might be in his whole career. The injuries, it's so sad. It's taken away the Kearney we love. Don't know when he'll ever. I don't even know if he's training right now. He might be training, but I can't imagine seeing him in a match with the knee issues he's had. And you guys are 100% right. We don't need him. There wasn't a massive Kearney gulf, but even if he is in the squad, I think Carvalho is a much more exciting mobile player in this moment. You're not going to bench Carvalho. And then the other seven midfielder spots, you have Onuma, Seri, and Anguissa. I do expect Anguissa to move on, but
Yeah, I expect
just
a lot
of depth in that position.
It's crazy.
So I think Kearney could definitely take a coaching route. I know it's a bit premature to say he's not right. retired yet, but I can't see him necessarily being an effective player in this team. And okay. I think that's a credit to the depth we have that we can say that.
It's crazy, Max, because I was really concerned that we would not have Tom Kearney from the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And to Marco Silva's credit, like I said, the players and obviously Balmerte and the rest of the staff, they have built aside a system that has worked without him. And, you know, I think in years past, we've really depended a lot on Tom Kearney. And they can function without him. I would rather them have him, but they're doing great right now, and I think that they can win without him. And that's, again, not something I want to say, but I think that's the reality, that Fulham can now play without Tom Kearney. And I do hope he returns, and only time will tell, but I think it's a good point from Emilio to bring that up, and we're all talking about it because it's funny because I you know, we really haven't talked about Kearney, and I think that's a credit to Fulham that we haven't, because the train really has moved on without him. All right, let's move on. Back over to you, Emilio. I haven't done this topic in a while. Turning point of the match. Where do you see the turning point?
Interesting. Was there a turning point, really, to be honest?
Was there a turning point of the match?
I don't think there was one, to be honest. At the end of the day, I thought it was fairly even Stevens the first 20. Again, we were looking very, you know, Robinson, I was quite critical of him after the Borough game. I thought
you were.
You know, but he's pulled up his socks since then. He's had some good performances. He had a hell of a lot of space down the left end. He looked always very lively, good couple crosses, which almost resulted in an Onana goal, I remember, early on in the first half. But again, that's when Fulham were looking quite productive on the left-hand side. But I'm not sure there is a turning point because it was just... The game was sort of even Stevens at that point. Hull started getting a little bit into the game. They started having a little bit more possession, you know, causing a few niggly little fouls and all that. And then suddenly turning point is probably the goal. You know, at the end of the day, when do we ever score from a set piece, from a corner? You know, it's unheard of. So it's the fact that Mitrovic, you know, jumped up and, you know, scored from a very well-crafted corner from Seri. Again, Seri, I know there's been some people are still a little bit sceptical on the comments board this evening, but I agree with Max. You know, he's a player who deserves to be playing at the high league, but he's got to pull up his socks and prove that he's willing to play when the chips are down. And when there's confidence in the team, you saw that, you know, great, good corner, Mitrovic rised above it, 1-0, thank you very much. For me, that was a turning point, because at that point, we started brightly, but then Hull slowly got back into the mix. And again, they were quite niggly the whole game, weren't they? They weren't pretty to watch. But overall, I think for me, that's a turning point, albeit it's not a massive turning point. I think it was only going to be a matter of time before Fulham scored. And thankfully, we did get the goal early on. But I thought it's just a shame that we had a few injuries to contend within the game.
Okay, very good. How about you, Max? Would you say it's the first goal?
I'm actually going to say it's the second goal, because I think that 2-0 lead killed it off. I really could have envisioned a match where we're up 1-0, much like Burrow, and the final 10 minutes come and they get a late equalizer because we couldn't get that insurance goal. So I think the Carvalho goal probably ended the contest for me. And you're 2-0 up like half an hour in. I think that was game over there.
Okay, very good. All right. Back over to you, Emilio. I'm going to share this comment from Stefan, someone that watches the show on a regular basis. Robinson's still not complete player for me, still can develop more. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree. But what's he got on his side? He's got age. He's still young. He's enthusiastic. He's got pace. He'll get better. To be honest, I thought he was brought into the Premier League maybe a bit too early, but he's certainly still, you know, people might disagree with me, but I still prefer him to Joe Bryan in defence. Sorry, you know, there's, you know, there'll be moments against Borough that I thought, you know, Robinson didn't put in the shift and looked quite weak. And maybe you could have argued Joe Bryan may have got a chance against Huddersfield, but, you know, Marcus Silva stuck with Robinson, persevered, and look, he's had three good performances since then. But, you know, overall, head-to-head, if both players were at their best, I still want Robinson ahead of Joe Bryan. You know that. I've never been a Joe Bryan fan. So overall, yeah, he's young. So he's upside there. So hopefully if we get promoted, he will learn from last season and will mature and become a lot more of a more important player for us next season if we get promoted.
Okay, excellent. All right. Before we go to this, getting your thoughts on the starting 11, there's a topic, a major talking point for us guys. Fulham's injuries pile up. Three injuries in this match, and these are significant players. We're talking Tim Ream goes on. And listen, I didn't want Tim Ream to start, but I think Tim Ream's been excellent. So credit to him, but he goes down with an injury. Then Kenny Tete goes down with an injury. And then Fabio Carvalho goes off as well with an injury. Max, I'll go to you first. How concerned are you about these three injuries? We'll talk about them individually in just a bit when we break down the match, but just overall, your thoughts on the injuries?
I think the most concerning one of them on the face of it is Carvalho, just because I think he's the least replaceable of those three, which is kind of crazy to say. They're all three quality players, but I think Carvalho is the most unique. Luckily, it didn't seem that was probably the least serious of the three. The Ream one looked really bad. I mean, he's a warrior, and you saw a 6-minute delay, struggling to get up, and he wanted to continue. And you know, when Ream has to hobble off, couldn't even raise his back upright. Looked a real painful one, but you know, he's been tweeting as he has been in the past couple months. We love that active Twitter account, and it doesn't seem to be too serious from what he's saying, so that's good. The Tete one, I think that's probably the most worrying, what Silva said in terms of severity, and he's had a bit of muscle problems in his time at Fulham, which is worrying me. Hopefully it's not too bad, but again, we saw Decad Overeed slot in really effectively. You know, we also have Christie, remember him, Dennis Odoi, Steven Sessegnon. Again, that's the depth there, which we can say is impressive. And again, Mawson came in. Fareem didn't put a foot wrong.
Not at all.
Another kind of blast from the past.
I know. It's crazy.
And again, we have Kongolo. I still think we have Michael Hector. We haven't mentioned his name in a long time, but Hector's still there. Terrence Kongolo.
Isn't it crazy we can just mention all of these names that are at their disposal right now, Max? It's crazy. Yeah.
It is mad, but that's the good thing about having such a strong squad. And then COVID has benefited us in that sense, because teams are all suffering financial repercussions and they can't afford to maybe poach these players and they can't afford their wages. That's a really good point. I think Kamal said in the comments, who's going to pay Seri 70 quid a week? If it's not Galatasaray, you know, not many other options for him, in my opinion.
Right.
So we can kind of keep these players on their maybe bloated wages and have a really good squad.
Okay, excellent. Like I said, when we break down the match, we'll go into a little bit more detail about the injuries, but I just wanted to get your thoughts, Emilio, just in general. The injuries, how concerned are you and which one concerns you the most? I agree with Max. For me, it's got to be Kenny Tete. I remember last season, and when I hear muscle injury, I'm like, uh-oh, that's not good.
That's not good. No, it isn't. That does worry me. That's the one. He just as he's getting momentum, scoring goals, playing. Oh, actually, the weird thing is, we were talking about him amongst the you know, the fans around where I sit. He wasn't really in the game much on Saturday. Let's be honest, up to the point of the goal, and then clearly a bit of quality, a bit of
talking magic. About Carvalho, right?
Yeah. So again, it's just the fact that he was in the right place at the right time, got a good eye for goal, good finisher, scored the second goal. But overall, his overall contribution was quite minimal, to be honest, at that point. But that's important, having that type of player who can come in, one chance, bang, 1-0, winner scores a goal for you. But that's a worry for me. Yep. The Tete position also worries me. No, not the fact that Tete's, like you said, I agree with you. He's had a couple of injuries last season, but that right back position is a bit light there. We've got Dennis who can play on the left and Joe Bryan and also Robinson. We're a bit light on the right hand side for me. That's where I think we've got some problems there, because Tete, I don't know what happened there. Because literally one moment I just saw him walking behind the back, you know, behind the goal, the opposition goal. It wasn't clear to me that he obviously pulled some sort of muscle injury, or potentially, I thought initially it was a hamstring. That's what it felt like initially. But overall, I think that's probably equally a position we need to be worried about. Tim Ream, I think, like you said, it's not too bad as it seems, but he's been a great captain on the pitch, hasn't he, the last three or four games. You know, we've missed that leadership in the Premier League. We just didn't have that last season. And now we've got Tim Ream, albeit not a Premier League player, but he gives you 100% passion week in, week out. And having some of that quality captaining the team is important. But I think the Tete injury is also important for me. I think we probably need to think about getting potentially a replacement there. I think we're light on the right back side of things.
Okay. Very interesting stuff there, Emilio. All right.
Let's Fulham now. Fan 26. This is in my loft room. This is my wife's. This used to be her studio, and it's got like, not as low as you think. Look, it's not as low as you think, guys. It's just, it's pages from a thesaurus dictionary. So yeah, she uses this as an art room, so it's all glued to the ceiling. So
okay, yeah,
plenty of headroom here. So look and see.
We were talking about that before we started the show, because Emilio's been getting some comments about where he does the show, and thank you, Emilio, for explaining that. Okay, let's now get to starting 11. Max, I'll give you first shot at this. What were your thoughts about the starting 11 before the match began, an hour before? Now, the one thing that I will say, and we could talk about this, I said this on the little preview show that I did. I wanted to see Rodak. So it's funny, because I expected Gazzaniga, but I wanted Rodak, because this goalkeeper right now doesn't fill me with confidence, Max. And he has shown me nothing in this match either, with not much to do to fill me with any more confidence. So that was the one thing that stood out to me. I knew it was going to happen, but I was just hoping that maybe he would make a change to Rodak, and that didn't happen.
That's an odd one, because what has Rodak done to be dropped? Nothing, right? He was injured supposedly the first couple matches or maybe preseason, and that's why Gazzaniga got the starting role. But it's not, I mean, Rodak hasn't played essentially since what? The Arsenal opening day of the season, September 2020. So, and that's what's always tough with the keepers, is you lose your spot and it's very hard to get it back.
Right.
So, but I mean, Gazzaniga's been a bit shaky. He didn't deal with a cross very well against Hull.
No.
I haven't seen anything totally glaring, though. I think once he makes a big mistake, then people have a better case. But I mean, I do feel for Rodak, but.
But he doesn't command his box, Max. He doesn't.
Listen, on a scale of Fabry to Areola, I think he's squarely in the middle. I'm not saying he's a Fabry disaster, but who knows?
Okay.
But the starting 11, right, it was unchanged since Millwall, so overall, I didn't have any problems with that. Interesting, though, curious your guys' thoughts on this. You know, Anguissa back on the bench, Anema starting. If I'm Marco Silva, and he said it earlier, I think, Anguissa, his head was turned, didn't want to play, wanted to get a move. If that's true, then that's true. He shouldn't be in the squad. If he's in the squad, I don't see why he didn't start. That's what I don't really understand.
That's an interesting point. Why doesn't Anguissa start? I want to say, what has Sarri done not to start?
Oh, I'd say take out Onana. But that's fair. They're not exactly the same. You can't swap them out like to like, but that's a good point.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Interesting thoughts there, Max. How about you, Emilio? And feel free to share your thoughts on what Max just shared when we're talking about Anguissa. It's an interesting one because. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because Anguissa is a player that should be starting, right? But it's also a very delicate situation with Silva, because Silva, you know, came out, you know, basically said he wanted players that wanted to be at Fulham. But on the other side of it, if they're here, you might as well take advantage of them. So he's on the bench, but I want to see Sarri starting. It's funny, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I'd rather have Sarri starting, but to Max's point, should he be playing with and sitting on him? I don't know. It's a good argument.
Yeah, I just think if we had Anguissa and Sarri both in the lineup, I think would have been quite lightweight in the middle of the park there. I think it's physique. Okay. I think it's probably the thing, having two of those sort of super players, as you want to call them. They haven't been super players for Fulham per se, but these players.
That we'd be exposed too much.
Yeah, I think we would have been, to be honest. Hull City, a fairly physical team. They're like roughing it up, and maybe having two of those similar type players, I think would have disrupted the structure of the team. That's why I think it's put Onema there, a bit more stronger, you know, more bullish, you know, more direct, shall we say, and a bit more clumsy at times as well. But equally, the middle of the pitch looked a bit more balanced without Anguissa there. And it's not a criticism of Anguissa, I just think you can't have those two arguably luxury players sitting in the middle of the park together, I think, in my opinion. Okay. And don't forget, we haven't talked about Harry Wilson, you know, let's be clear.
That's right.
He's we've spent, what, 11, 12 million on this player? So to be honest, if he was fit to start the next league game, or he will be available in the next league game against Stoke, I think Cabana will make way. I think, you know, Cabana did okay on Saturday at times, didn't influence the game enough for me, and he will be the natural person to drop down to the bench, and you'll bring Harry Wilson back in on Saturday against Stoke. But Glenn, let's not forget about Harry Wilson.
It's crazy, Emilio. Yeah. They're doing this without Harry Wilson. They're doing this again with Harrison Reed not being involved. Yeah. Like, we were already talking about Kearney. And, oh, by the way, they finally signed Rodrigo Muniz. You're going to add him to the mix as well. Again, it's crazy to say how much Fulham have now, as people are pointing out. Anguissa could and probably will go, yes. But I think that they're well-equipped to deal with Anguissa leaving. Let me go to you, Max. If you had your choice, and we've talked about this, would you keep Anguissa or keep Sarri? If you had to choose, if you could only have one of them with us, which one would you keep right now? Which one do you think is more valuable to Fulham right now? And then I'll ask Emilio, if you had to choose between Sarri and Anguissa.
I think it's Anguissa for me.
Okay.
I mean, he was an excellent player, one of our best players in the Premier League last season.
Yeah.
By that logic, he should be one of the best players in the Championship, if not the best player. And I just haven't seen that from Sarri consistently. I know we do have concerns, I think, about Sarri's physicality, whereas Anguissa, I think, has none of those concerns. He's a great player in terms of getting his body in the way and muscling off the opposition. I'd love to see Anguissa, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And Harrison good. Reed. Stefan's saying we still have Harrison Reed too. Yep. That's a good point.
Absolutely. Emilio, your thoughts on this? Because again, listen, we all expect Anguissa to leave. We do expect that, but I think Fulham can deal with him leaving at this point. And you know, if they both left and talking about Sarri and Anguissa, I think that would hurt. I think that would actually hurt right now, based on what we've seen from Sarri. But if you had to choose, if you're Marco Silva and he's asked which one, you can only keep one of them. Who would you keep?
That's it. Interesting dilemma. Both have had their shown their frustrations, and both have at times not wanting to play for the club. And sometimes that's also due to lack of confidence, team not winning, etc. So there's a lot of underlying fact. When look at Mitrovic last season, being dropped, not playing, confidence shot to pieces. Now he's a different player. He's transformed.
Unbelievable.
We've seen Sarri transform, but it's only three games against Championship opposition. So let's not get too carried away. But I agree with Max. I think Anguissa, I thought, got a lot of stick on Sarri last season. I actually thought up till Christmas time he was our best player. Everyone was talking about him in the Premier League top 11 players in the Premier League last season up till Christmas. He was getting man of the matches from myself, from Max, from others. And then suddenly rumours to have got COVID and he wasn't the same player in the second half of the season. But let's not forget what he did. We've seen he can deliver in the Premier League, albeit he did it for half a season. So.
But would he be willing to play for Fulham in the Championship the entire season?
I don't think so.
That's the part that, I understand where Max is going, but I don't know what his commitment would be, Max, going back to you on that, if he was forced to play in the Championship.
That's fair. That's a fair point. And the flip side is no one really wants Sarri because he hasn't had that track record of Premier League experience. So therefore,
it's just an interesting little conundrum.
But Anguissa is in demand. It's a good one.
I don't look at the Harrison. Stefan's mentioned that we still have Harrison. I agree with that. But yes, he was a busy little player the first half of the season, looked lively for us. But we saw what Harrison Reed is not capable of doing in the Premier League in the second half of last season. When the chips are down, Harrison Reed was left, he was out of his depth. Let's be very clear. He was one of our poorest performers when the steep decline from February, March time. When we won away to Everton and Liverpool, there was a steep decline. Harrison Reed's performance was poor. And he was injured. So I'm worried about his injury levels as well. We're talking about Tom Kenny's fitness levels. Harrison Reed is, his third season of Fulham? I've lost count how many injuries he's picked up.
Yeah, I think he's been injured pretty much every season, right?
Yeah. And lengthy periods. He's been out a month here, a month there. So the fact that we're playing well without him, that's encouraging.
Absolutely. Okay, very good. All right, coming up next, we're going to break down this match. We'll look at the first half and the second half. We'll obviously talk about the injuries. And we'll end with man of the match. Feel free to share. Who was your man of the match? Okay, guys, let's break down this match. And let's start. Unfortunately, we're going to start with Tim Ream. Tim Ream, in the first half, Emilio, I'll go to you because, as you mentioned, it was pretty even to start off. And I want to give Hull some credit. But the first major situation we have to talk about is Tim Ream. Fell on his back. It looked ugly. Yeah. Emilio, so I want to get your thoughts on his injury and what was going through your mind when you saw it. Did you think that this was serious? Because he wasn't, again, as Max said, I think this lasted about 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah, and he was right in front of me. You saw the pictures I sent you after the game, literally right in front of me. And you could just see the expression in his face. He was in a lot of pain there, and you can feel it didn't look pretty. And Tim Ream, normally he's straight up. He doesn't exaggerate. He doesn't feign injury. When he's on the floor for that length of time, there's something was wrong. And then he sort of recovered. He walked a few steps, on the byline. Then and suddenly, he just couldn't stand up straight. So clearly, I don't know why they just didn't get a stretcher for him, because that was my first reaction: get a stretcher, take him off, and don't put any further pressure. But it looked ugly, to be honest. It looked dangerous. But thankfully, maybe it's not as bad as we first saw it. And maybe that's testament to the strength and courage of Tim Ream. He's been through the wars over his time as a football professional. So, but overall, that my worry is who's going to slot in that position. I completely forgot about Michael Hector wasn't on the bench.
Michael Hector, right?
This was a player who was our best player in the second half of the promotion season on the park. And now suddenly he's surplus to requirements to some extent. We might see him tomorrow against Birmingham. Alfie Mawson, I don't think he did much wrong. He didn't have much to do. Let's be honest. He wasn't under, but then it's important just to find your feet, get your fitness levels up, get into a rhythm of playing football, and putting yourself, you know, in that back four with Tosin. But, you know, Mawson, how much did we pay for him? 15, 20 million a few seasons ago?
Yeah.
It's we forget about him. But he's again, if he can stay fit and free from injury, then potentially he can play an important part for us, him or Hector. Look at them head to head. You know, he didn't get a chance a couple of years ago. Hector, we signed him, you know, very promising player. But look, you saw how much out of his depth he was in the Premier League. And
right
really now he's got to fight for his place. Was Mawson's slotted in, maybe taking his opportunity, and, you know, he didn't put a foot wrong in that game.
Not at all, Emilio, because, again, I didn't notice any drop-off, and that is a testament to Mawson. I saw the same types of passes you would see with Tim Ream, and, again, he was great in the air. You know, mm-hmm. again, he was challenging everything. I thought he was fantastic. So so credit to him taking advantage of his opportunity. All these players taking advantage of their opportunities. That's what we really need to focus on. And, you know, again, I don't want this to be a Marco Silva love fest, but why are all these players – all of a sudden with a different manager performing? And here's another one. You know, again, this might be a situation with a player taking advantage of his opportunity in Mawson. But over to you, Max. Shortly after that, after Mawson comes on, we have the goal. So I'm going to give you the honors of talking about the goal from Mitro in the 22nd minute. This is from a corner. Now, what's interesting, and I know you've seen the replay of it, looks like there was some action going on to free Mitro here. So what are your thoughts about all this? Because I think the Hull City supporters were a little bit angry about a potential foul here that set up Mitro for the goal. Your thoughts? You know, again, listen, we'll take it. It's a goal. And it was very well set up by Jean-Michel Seri on the corner.
Yes, and I think Tosin... it's a funny one. He doesn't move, but he does shift his shoulder, so he's kind of facing the player. So it was a bit of a pick.
Yes, that ran right into him. That would be a good way. It was like a pick, like a pick in basketball.
I don't think it's a foul, because simply Tosin doesn't, you know, go out of his way to get in his way. No. He just kind of turns up, you're there, and he runs right into them. In that sense, maybe it's a good movement by Mitro. It's an excellent ball from Seri, something that we haven't seen a lot from him. I can't remember how many set pieces he swung and then just gone well over our attacks. That was a great ball. But Mitro, that's a great header, because although it's a free header, he directs it perfectly and off the post, and it's a tight angle. And I think a lot of players, you know, might have headed that right to the keeper, but terrific goal. And the celebrations might have been the best part. You have Seri jumping on Mitro, you know, doing his signature celebration.
Yeah.
You know, Cabano gets involved. The whole team gathers over there by the cottage. It's amazing that kind of team morale from one player, Mitrovic,
playing for each other.
Yeah, playing for each other. One player, Seri, who we never thought would play in the championship.
That's the amazing one.
And they all look like having a great time. And that's what winning does to a team. So
exactly. I totally agree with that. All right, back over to you, Emilio. We talked about I don't mean to be doing this, but I'm giving you the injuries. I really don't mean to do it. But I want to get your thoughts about this, because, again, I don't think me and Max got any view of this. So hopefully you got to see, when did Kenny Tete go off injured? Because we certainly didn't see it. And what did you see here? Were you able to see this?
No, it was literally on the other diagonal, the other side of the pitch. All I could see, the only time it was obvious, is when he was walking back towards the dressing room. I think, okay, what's going on here? It's clearly, I didn't see any incident on that side of the pitch. I thought initially when it was probably a hamstring, that's the only thing it could have been. Something muscle related or hamstring injury. So I didn't see any innocuous foul there. I didn't see him fall over. I think he just pulled something. That's what it felt like.
Yep.
And the way he was like really walking extremely slowly back to the dressing room behind the opposition goal. That clearly obviously felt it was going to be at least a month to 6 week injury from what I could tell.
Okay, very good. All right.
He wasn't really much in the game though. I didn't see him
he
was involved. He was very quiet up to that point. I saw it was all the running and all the width came from on the left-hand side from Robinson, where he was getting ahead of a lot of space. And obviously he got the assist for the second goal, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Yeah, we absolutely will. And I want to get your thoughts to follow up on that. Bobby Decadova-Reed comes in to take his place. How do you think he did in place of Tete?
Steady. He did okay. You know, again, we've seen his versatility in the Premier League last season. You know, Scott Parker playing him in various positions. So naturally, that was the most automatic choice to replace Tete with. But he did okay. He didn't, again, he didn't have much to do. You know, this was a poor Hull team, and you know, maybe against better opposition, maybe he might come a little bit more unstuck. But you know, he did a safe job without setting the world alight, to be honest.
Okay. All right. Excellent. All right, Max, over to you. I'm giving you the honors again. I'm sorry, Emilio. I'm giving him the honors to talk about Fabio Carvalho's goal. Again, just the kid is special. Can we just say it? I think it's fair to say he's special. He scores another goal. And as you said, this is your turning point, and I can see your point on this, because at 2-0, it's a different game than 1-0. So thoughts on the goal?
Yeah, started off by, again, some we've mentioned a lot today, Anthony Robinson on that left wing back role. Actually, Cavalero is the one who plays Robinson the through ball, and that shows you how far forward Robinson was, because it was almost like Cavalero is playing left back role and Robinson's the left winger. And it's a decent ball past a couple players into Carvalho. And a lot of people said his touch was heavy. That's what Gentleman Jim said on the audio. But I don't think it was, actually, because it took a deflection. And I don't think Carvalho knew too much about that first touch at all. But what was impressive is how quickly he got onto it. And it was fortunate in the way that the touch brought the keeper out of his goal. In a way, if he just controlled it right at his feet, the keeper would have probably stayed home, and gives Carvalho that chance just to slot it right into the same corner Mitrio scored in. And it was a great finish, because you have a center back diving into it, you have the keeper making himself big, and he just kind of coolly sides-foot it to make it 2-0. That is the kind of thing you can't teach in a player, and which is why people comparing him to Sessegnon in terms of his finishing and his, you know, tenacious quality in the box. But for me, he's a better player than Sessegnon ever was, because Carvalho takes over matches. And Sessegnon, as great as Sessegnon was, as much as I love Ryan Sessegnon, he would be peripheral and score.
Wow, we're going there already.
Well, listen, Emilio made a good point, which Carvalho was a bit peripheral until the goal. But the Millwall match, to me, was his best match, in the sense he ran the show. Played through balls, gets in the ball, dribbles, takes people on. That's why he's so valuable. And, you know, he won't be with us forever. We just got to cherish him while he's here.
Okay, excellent. All right, so, guys, the half ends 2-0 and Fulham are comfortable. But, Emilio, I'm going to go back to you to begin the second half. And, again, I think this is a testament to, you just talked about Anthony Robinson. You've been critical, but I thought he played very well. He could be many fans' man of the match. The Hull City manager makes a change at halftime, and what I've been reading it had to do with Robinson. This is credit to Anthony Robinson. Let's talk about this, because this talks about how well he did especially in the first half.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that you barely saw Robinson cross the halfway line in the second half. But I also think it was tactics on our side as well. I thought, you know, with two injuries in the first half, and you're why stretch yourself? Why go and score third, fourth, fifth goal? As much as it's beautiful to see. Take your time. You aren't being pressed. You aren't under any pressure against this Hull City team. Why take unnecessary risks? That's why, you know, we played it with a lot of possession in the second half. But we could have been more threatening. But I clearly understand, with two injuries to be worried about, that's the reason why he said let's not stretch ourselves if we don't have to. Which is why it's all testament to the Fulham team. With 2-0 up, two injuries, yet we're still playing second gear and not be threatened. The keeper had one thing to do in the second half. And like I said, he fluffed across, didn't he? When another day we could have got caught out there. But overall, yeah, I agree. The Hull manager made a tactical change in the second half. Robinson was pushed back, but we didn't need him to push forward. We didn't need him to exert himself. You know, we were 2-0 up, very comfortable, under no pressure whatsoever. And you know, where it was disappointing for me is maybe Cabano. You know, again, you know, as much Cabano's playing in and out of the squad and over this time at Fulham. And I don't think he took his opportunity enough for me in this game. I think that's why I think Carvalho and Cabana didn't particularly link up well yet on Saturday. When Wilson comes in and Carvalho's there, I think there's a better rapport, better link up play. There's a bit more quality consistently. And that's probably what we'll see when Wilson is back. But hopefully Carvalho won't be out for long term. But like I've said before, silver tactics second half. Don't go score five or six. Just protect the lead. Try to get a third goal. But don't put yourself under necessary pressure, because you're going to win this game.
Okay, excellent. So as we talk about the second half, and we'll get more of your analysis in a second, Emilio, I think you already nailed it. But again, I've had you talk about two injuries, so I have to have Max talk about the third. Max, let's talk about the injury to Fabio Carvalho. Mm-hmm. It's been reported that it potentially was an ankle injury. Thoughts on this? And it's funny because it's a player that, again, I don't think Fulham really can afford to lose right now. We were going to say that, even with Harry Wilson coming back shortly. You want to see this kid play as much as possible. But we'll have to see how severe it is. What were your thoughts when you saw this?
Yeah, I mean, he's just been kicked, you know, all match, same in all the other games he's played this year. He's a target. It's what happens in the championship. It's unfortunate, but he has to get used to it. And I think, actually, to his credit, did a really good job of bouncing up from past, you know, knocks he's gotten from the opposition. This, obviously, I think might have been the final nail in the coffin, forced him off. But it didn't seem like it was that serious, thankfully. I mean, he walked off relatively fine. But I hate to say he has to toughen up, because the player shouldn't necessarily be forced to just be kicked, you know, for 90 minutes, almost like Jack Grealish sometimes does. But I think he has to develop the know-how of, you know, how to ride those tackles, you know, almost like, you know, Hazard does a good job of that. Just constantly foul up, you get back up. Hopefully, the referee protects him. That's a big thing. Give people bookings and make sure that it doesn't get out of hand.
Okay. All right.
And on that point, though, there's one thing we haven't mentioned so far, if I may. It's the tactics of Hull City throughout the game. These niggling fouls, this theatrical diving on the floor, constantly back chatting to the ref. I thought, especially in that second half, as much as we were dominant, every decision went against Fulham throughout the whole of that second half. You know, we get a yellow card for an innocuous challenge. Hull City do two of the same, no yellow card. So the referee, absolutely appalling on Saturday, especially that second half.
That's a good point.
He lost control of the game completely, didn't know what was going on. And, you know, I'd argue some of the niggling fouls that were going on, if you're in the ground watching, does he think off the ball remarks, comments, back chatting to the referee? All throughout the game, they did that. And that really disrupted the flow of the game. Yet we still came away with a 2-0 win. So that's why I feel it wasn't our most refined performance you'll ever see, but we didn't need to. We got the two goals. We looked controlling, yet we had to deal with a Hull City team that were constantly niggly fouls and back chatting to the referee throughout the whole game.
See, but Emilio, they needed to do that because they're not talented enough to play it straight up against Fulham. They, you know, and that again is a testament to Fulham that they need to do that.
In a little foul from corner, then there was one moment in the second. We got yellow card. Was it Cavalera? I can't remember. We got yellow carded in the second half from a corner, and you know, right in front of me, nothing wrong with that. Basically, the guy went into Cavalero. Cavalero wasn't even looking at the player. Then girl comes over with a yellow card, all because of the whole city players back chatting to the referee. Now that's what got Cav the yellow card. So it's you know, that's like you said, Russ. Maybe that's what that's the best they can do. They have to resort to cheap tactics. But the way they just kept, you know, those tactics were not good enough for me. It was quite appalling, to be honest.
Okay. All right. Emilio, just quickly on just your overall thoughts. You've already talked a little bit about the second half, just a professional, see the match out performance.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to see Mitrovic maybe should have scored a third goal. I thought that was a peach of a cross.
He did.
You've got to hit the target.
He had a great opportunity.
You've got to hit the target. That's one of, obviously, Silva making the point. We should have scored a few more. I'm not sure we should have scored a few more, but that was probably the best chance in the second half. You know, great header, but you've got to hit the target there. So, but some people are commenting, well, if we're behind, how will this team
themselves up?
You know, can we fight back? Like Stefan says, we've yet to see that, to be honest, but we know we've got goals in this team. We've got hunger, we've got desire. We're going to go through a few downs, no doubt, this season. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how we do perform. I think we've got enough depth there, enough quality. And look at our bench. You know, theoretically, look at the quality of our bench on Saturday. It's incredible. The fact that we've got Anguissa, 25, 30 million pound player, on the bench.
It's crazy.
Playing a second tier team. It's incredible.
It really is. Max, I'll give you the final word on the second half, and then we're going to go to man of the match.
I think Emilio touched on it the best. It devolved a bit into bookings and the kind of needless fights, and the referee kind of lost control, which wasn't great to watch, you know, from a fan's perspective, but we're 2-0 up and we could afford to, you know, have all those histrionics going on, and we weren't bothered. And that's what's the benefit of, you know, getting that 2-goal cushion.
Okay, excellent. All right. All right, guys, let's go to the man of the match. If you are watching live, feel free to share who your man of the match was. And I know I've got some comments. I'll share that in a second. But I'll go to you first, Max. Who is your man of the match?
I'm going to go Anthony Robinson. You know, got set up that Carvalho goal, was dangerous all match, deserved another assist for the Mitro header in the second half. Really delighted with his play in general. And he showed a great progression from the Middlesbrough opening match. So give it to Robinson.
Okay. Emilio, Seri for you?
Yeah, Seri for me. Robertson, I had a close second, but I thought Seri, yeah, I agree with you also, Russ, where maybe at times a little bit too complacent on the ball and got caught out a few times. But, you know, he looked dangerous from set pieces, from corners. He kept the ball, he kept the game moving. He kept looking forward. And you just see his body language as well. You see the body language from a couple seasons ago, very down, uninterested. He was, you know, he was giving some, you know, some basic advice and some, you know, just little chats to some of his players. Direction here, move over there, passing the ball. It's just keeping that ball flowing was important against a team like Hull City. You don't want to constantly get foul start. You actually want to keep the possession going. And just the way he was just passing the ball, spreading the ball from left to right, right to left, was a pure joy to watch. Again, albeit it says a poor Hull City team, but you've still got to perform on the pitch. And again, you know, at times the conditions weren't great on Saturday. Whip windy, rainy.
Yep.
Then it was dry. Then it started raining again. So these are conditions maybe Seri wouldn't like to play under. But clearly in the rain, he performed well on Saturday. And I'll give him my man the match because he kept the game flowing for me.
Okay.
And Robinson had a good first half. You know, was the best in the first half. Second half, quieter. But didn't he need to be put on? He didn't need to exert himself that second half. He could choose his moments.
Okay, very good. I'm going to share some comments before I share mine. Mawson was my man of the match. Came in and did a job. And I totally agree with that. No drop off at all. Anthony Robinson for our friend here. Let's see. Robinson, my man of the match. Much maligned. Okay, let's see what else we've got, guys. And then we'll finish up. Let's see what we got here. Robinson. Stefan says, sorry. And that's going to do it for man of the match. I'll share mine, and I'm going to agree, and I'm going to go say Seri, but as we're talking about it, my only concern with Seri is sometimes, you know, again, that laissez-faire attitude where he, you know, he's got to be careful. Even in the championship, he's got to be careful that someone's going to come from behind and take the ball off of him. But beyond that, he controlled the match, so he's my man of the match. Okay. All right. Good stuff, guys. To wrap this up, let's talk about the Carabao Cup. Talk about the Carabao Cup. Real quick on the Carabao Cup. Max is smiling. I'll give you first thoughts on this. Max, what do you think we're going to see in the Carabao Cup? What kind of team do you think we're going to see in the Carabao Cup for Fulham? And also, how much do you care about the Carabao Cup?
Well, it's the most prestigious cup competition in the world, so I think we should play our starters. And when you win it this year, it's a must-have. Bigger than promotion. No. It's a shame that Kamara's left because he loves a good Carabao Cup run out. It's his classic competition. I think hopefully we'll see some youngsters. Hopefully we'll see Francois play in midfield. Maybe Cyrus Christie will play right back. Maybe Rodak plays and, you know, puts another really great performance and makes a bid. Hector, people have mentioned. It'll be nice to kind of see the peripheral figures, Joe Bryan as well. And again, it's against Birmingham, so, you know, same league. Not an exciting match, in my opinion, but just hoping no one really gets injured and maybe some fringe players can put in a good shift and maybe get the start Saturday.
Okay. How about you, Emilio?
Yeah, you know, I always like a cup run. You know, to be honest, you don't want the compromise of relegation, staying in the Premier League or getting promoted. But, you know, we've got enough depth in this squad to be able to give, you know, Birmingham a run for their money and win there tomorrow. I'd like to see, obviously, Rodak will start tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Without Surrey. I think Hector will start because obviously if Reem's injured, then who's our backup central defence? So Mawson will probably start against Stoke. And then so you'd expect Hector to get to the bench. So clearly Hector will need some game time tomorrow. I suspect Joe Bryan will play tomorrow. Again, give him an opportunity. You're probably going to see a completely new back four tomorrow, to be honest. So, but, you know, I don't want to change the entire team. Let's not, you know, keep one cup second team and the first team. I think let's play some of these plays. And but it's all about practice and confidence. But if we could go to Birmingham and win this game, but don't be surprised we end up disappointed and get knocked out of the cup. And that's just my slight gut feeling. But I'd like to see us go on a cup run and go to the final, go to Wembley, and whether we win or lose, it's something to play for, to be honest. But I think at the moment it's all about playing for places, isn't it? Especially we've got a few injuries now.
Okay, very good. I want to share a couple more here. And this is our friend Roger Lewis. By the way, I'm Roger Lewis on Facebook and Grand Dag on Friends of Fulham. So just want to mention that, Roger. Hope everything is going well for you. I want to share this from Steve Reynolds because I've tried to get Steve Reynolds to watch Ted Lasso. So I just want to decide would Wake or Ted Lasso play. Very funny, Steve. Enjoy the show. I love the show. Max, I know you do too because you've been tweeting about it too. So I'm a big Ted Lasso fan. It's a great show if you have not watched it. Before we go, I also want to mention this. Please subscribe on YouTube to our YouTube channel. Please do so. Again, we're starting to build that up. We are now live on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, Cottage Talk Twitter page first time, and of course on YouTube. But please do subscribe to our YouTube channel. All right. Well, guys, that's going to do it for this episode of Cottage Talk. It's been great. Emilio, final thoughts before we go.
No, great. Great to be back on the show, be with you, Max, as well. So we always have a good camaraderie as well.
Oh, it's great.
So it's still great. Great rapport, the three of us. Yeah, but it always helps when you win, isn't it? It always helps when the team is performing. You get a victory on the belt, but there'll be times you'll see how we perform. When it's good to see the chips. Sometimes we weren't playing at our best, yet we still can come away disappointed, only to win 2-0. That's
pretty good, man. That's pretty good.
Encouraging sign, but it's early days yet. Let's not get carried away. All we can do is keep winning, and the rest will talk. You know, let the performances do the talking for the rest of the season. You know, that's the way I look at it.
Okay, excellent. Max, I know it's good to talk about other things right now for you. Talk a little Fulham. So keep your mind off of everything else going on for you. Max is a top-notch political reporter. So now, instead of talking about that for a little bit, he gets to talk about Fulham. Get off that for a little bit. So,
Thanks, Ross. I'm just going to say we've mentioned it the entire podcast, but we're top of the league. So I can't remember last time Fulham were top of the league in anything. Let's savor that being number one for once.
Okay, very good. All right. Well, listen, great show. Thank you, everyone who's commented, and we'll be back soon for another episode of Cottage Talk, but we do have to wrap it up. For Emilio Danilo and Max Cohen, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for watching and listening to Cottage Talk. It's the 90th minute, and all to play for at the end of the match. All your mates are around. You've got your McDonald's share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? I know I'm in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.